Welcome to the AT Parenting Survival Podcast, where you get help and guidance through the chaos of parenting a child with anxiety or OCD. This show is for educational purposes and is not intended to replace the guidance of a qualified professional. Here's your host, child therapist, Natasha Daniels.
Well, hello there, and welcome to another episode of the AT Parenting Survival Podcast. Today, I want to talk to you about one of my favorite bonus approaches that I do with kids who have anxiety or OCD, whether it's my own children or the kids that I've worked with in my practice and in my communities, and that is storytelling. I love storytelling. And if you've been listening to this podcast for any amount of time, really, I am a storyteller. I mean, that is really the first thing that I am. I feel like I'm a teacher and I'm a storyteller. I was talking to my daughter about this the other day. We're talking about, she was complaining about her teacher and how some people, you know, have the skill, but they don't have the talent to teach. And so it brought up this whole conversation that I was talking to her about how just because you're good at something doesn't mean that you're skilled at teaching. It's kind of like how, you know, we promote teachers to administration or people who are really good at their job, and then we promote them to like management, and their management's a totally different skill, right? And so it almost makes no sense. And I think the same thing with teaching, but that's a total side note, that some people just innately are good teachers. And I was saying to her, you know, I am much more of a teacher than I am a therapist. I love teaching. And that's why I think I love anxiety and OCD so much, because it's really teaching skills. It's teaching the way to think. So I love helping you guys because I love teaching parents. And the other most powerful tool that I feel like we can use with teaching is storytelling, because storytelling makes things come alive. Storytelling makes people feel heard. Storytelling makes you feel like you're not alone. And that is a big part of what I do on this podcast, is I tell you my stories, and I do it with intention. It's not like my confessional box, although I do love it and it feels very good. But that's why I never ever feel like, oh gosh, I have to record a podcast, because I love talking and teaching through stories, and I love disclosing my own stories. And I talk to my children about getting permission to disclose their stories so that we can use that to help other people. It's a tool. And so I'm going to talk today about how to use storytelling to help your child with anxiety or OCD, regardless of age. I'm going to talk about different, you know, some approaches that are better for some age levels than others, but I'm also going to talk about how we can utilize this in so many different facets. So it's not just about telling a story and there's like a little nugget, a little lesson in there, but I'm going to talk about how to use storytelling in many, many different facets of helping our kids with anxiety or OCD, or helping, if you're a therapist, helping your clients or patients. Storytelling is a powerful tool. Before we get started, though, I do want to thank NoCD for sponsoring this episode. NoCD offers affordable, effective, convenient therapy, and luckily they're available in the U.S. and outside of the U.S. You can schedule your free 15-minute consultation to see if NoCD is the right fit for you and your child. Just go to treatmyocd.com. That is treatmyocd.com, and I'll leave a link as well in the show notes. Also, you are still in luck, but you're about to run out of luck. My free series is still going on, and it's crazy to not soak up a free resource that I'm offering that will give you so much value in your journey raising a child with anxiety or OCD. So I think a lot of times parents are starting in the wrong place, and they're starting and they're using the wrong approaches, or they don't have all the ingredients, or they're depending on the professional, or they're waiting for a professional, and anxiety or OCD is growing in the interim. We have to create a home environment that is therapeutic. We have to have things in place in our house that help foster that growth to crush anxiety or OCD. Anxiety and OCD doesn't live in a bubble. And so we can't, you know, contain it in a 50-minute session once a week, if we're lucky, for the therapist to deal with. And then the rest of the time, nothing happens. You're not going to make long-term progress. And I've seen that mistake with so many parents that I've worked with in my practice. And I've seen that happen with so many families in my community, that they are either starting in the wrong spot. And so they're feeling like this isn't working. And why isn't this working for my child? And kind of give up, or they get frustrated, or they get burnt out, or they're kind of spinning their wheels waiting for the professional to take over. And that doesn't work. And kids struggle long term. So I created this free series to give you a full roadmap of this is what a therapeutic home environment will look like. This is what we have to do at home. And it's not hard to set up once you know what to do. So we have to do at home in order for our child to live in an environment that is therapeutic, that's not growing the anxiety OCD, that's coaching and cheerleading. And once you come up with that roadmap, then you have to figure out, where do I start on this roadmap? This is what the big picture looks like. Now, where do I start? And that will be different for each one, each person. And that is why in the series, I have you take a quiz to find out where you're at and where your child is at, so that you know your entry point of this is what I need to focus on right now. Because more often than not, people are focusing actually on the wrong thing. And that's the number one problem I see with the people in my AT parenting community. When they come in at first, they'll say, we're doing this, this, and this, and it's not working. And I'll be like, well, wait a minute. Did you do this? No. What is that? I don't know how to do that. Okay. Well, you can't move forward until we work on this part. So let's talk about how to get to this part. And that's what I do for you in the free series. I try to help you figure out where you're at, where your child is at, and then what the big picture will look like, which is not complicated, and then where you need to start. So you have this solid roadmap by the end of the series. And it's so popular, I do it twice a year. And honestly, I see the same people taking it quite a lot, and they'll say, I love this series. It just really helps me. It resets me. I know where I need to go. I know where I need to start. So if that is you, we are in the middle of it right now. But the cool thing, everything I do with the intention of, or with the knowledge that I am providing this to an overwhelmed parent, you know, who is busy, who's exhausted. And so I make everything I do on demand so that you don't ever have to watch anything live per se. And so we are in the second week of the series. So there's three videos. They are on demand. They're the same videos that I show every time I do this series. But then every series, I add a live component where I create a temporary Facebook group. There is a series website, and I do live bonus classes on each video. And you can watch the replays of those live videos as well. And the reason why I do that is because we have different discussions and different stories that I share every time I do this series. And so the live bonus classes are different every single time. So we are in the middle of it. The third video will be coming out tomorrow, which is April 18th, 2024, depending on when you're listening to this episode. And you can still sign up, register, and you can watch the first two videos. They're 30 minutes each. I purposely make them really short because I know we just want the knowledge. We don't have all the time in the world. So register at atparentingsurvivalseries.com. It is completely free. You will get a ton of value out of it. And I look forward to seeing you over there. Okay, let's jump into today's topic, which I love because I've not done an episode on storytelling, and I love, love, love storytelling, as you can tell, right? Because everything I do is storytelling to you. So let's start with the simple things, and then we're going to get deeper into like more creative ways to use storytelling. When I started to think about this topic, and I thought, oh, I want to do an episode on storytelling. And whenever I do an episode, I brainstorm. I do the same thing when I do a live class. I do weekly live classes in the AT parenting community, my like membership community. I do live classes every Friday on Zoom. And whenever they vote on a topic, and so I'm kind of given a topic to talk about, I always brainstorm, and I make a little outline of like all the things that I think about that are important to share. And I did that for this topic too. And as I was thinking about storytelling, I was like, well, wait a minute. Even explaining anxiety or OCD is storytelling if we can do it well. And I think part of the reason why I resonate with so many parents and click with so many kids is really because of my use of storytelling. And it's not that I'm doing it on purpose. It's just kind of the way I teach and I speak. But I feel like storytelling really simplifies things. So the first use of storytelling is on how we explain anxiety or OCD. So when I talk about anxiety, and we're not going to dive too deep into this today because that's not the topic at hand. The topic is actually the tool of storytelling, but I'm going to use this as an example. When I talk about anxiety, and in the AT parenting community, I actually have a video that I created for members on how to, it's actually a video for their kids on explaining anxiety. And I have one for OCD as well. And I explain them differently because they are coming from two parts of the brain, two different parts of the brain. And the way they function, the way that they physiologically function is very different. And so when I talk about anxiety, I'll say to kids, you know, you have an overreactive lifeguard in your brain. And I go through that. I'll say, you know, this lifeguard, and I always want people to know, depending on their age, that I'm not making this stuff up, that I'm actually just personifying the brain. So I'll say your lifeguard, which actually is part of your brain called the amygdala, is looking out for you. That's what that part of the brain does. It's like, I'm here for you. I'm protecting you. And when you have anxiety, your lifeguard is a little overprotective. And so there's an alarm bell and it goes and it hits the alarm bell when it thinks that you need to know so that the body can prepare you. It can help you run faster. It can help you move out of the way. It can make you more hyper alert. It can do all these amazing superpower type of things if your lifeguard hits the emergency bell. The problem is that your lifeguard is overprotective. And so it thinks things are emergency when it's not, and it's constantly hitting the alarm bell. So you're getting a lot of false alarms. So I go into just what that looks like physically and how do we retrain the lifeguard, or depending on the child's personality, how do we fire the lifeguard and hire a new one? So I change my stories based on the child's personality and what will resonate with them. And I think that I see that as a fault sometimes in the mental health community, is that sometimes I think therapists will get a perspective of how they want to talk about anxiety or OCD. And then they want to use that method for every kid. So, you know, the lifeguard is your friend and he's trying to protect you. And we have to love him and have compassion for him and then retrain him. That works really well for some kids. But you might have other kids that do better with an empowering message of, we're going to fire him and we're going to hire a new one. We're going to train the new one and we're going to ignore the other one. You have to tie in your style with the child's personality, not with what method you resonate with. And so I teach both. I figure out which one they're going to like. I'll say, should we retrain your lifeguard or should we fire him and hire a new one? What do you think, right? So that's an example of storytelling with anxiety. I'm not going to go way deep into it, but just to give you a little touch on that. If you are in my AT parenting community, you can watch that video. Just go to the member website and then go to videos and then the categories like kids videos. And then we also have, there's a category called anxiety videos. You can find it in either one. It's in both categories. Now for OCD, I talk about a different type of story. And I mean, that will, again, will look different depending on your child. But I will say things like, with OCD, your brain gets a message that it needs to do something. And with OCD, it's a little bit trickier. My video for OCD in the member community is actually just more about the science. I'm still telling a story, but I'm not really talking about it in a personified sort of way. I'm talking about a filtering issue. And so I'll say, you know, everybody has thoughts, but they don't get, you know, with OCD, they don't get filtered out. And so when they're not getting filtered out, and I draw this in the video. So if you are a member, go look at this video. If you haven't, it's called The Science Behind ERP. It actually really should say, because I talk about ERP as well and how it helps. But I use that all the time of using OCD and a metaphor of OCD, like a filter, or having them understand that things are not being filtered out is a good visual for kids. So we want to do some storytelling around that so they can help. I also use storytelling when I talk about the neural pathways, you know, that really when you're doing a compulsion, you're growing those neural pathways or you're reinforcing those neural pathways. And I'll say you have a, you know, it's like you have a country road in your head. And every time you do a compulsion, you're growing those lanes. And so now it's a 2-lane highway, then it's a 6-lane highway. And we want to rip down the 6-lane highway in your brain, and we want to get it back to a country road. And eventually we want it to become maybe just a nature path where it's not even paved. Again, that visual can really, really help. that's how we even just talk about anxiety or OCD. You know, language is very useful. But I want to also move into storytelling in its like in the true essence of storytelling, how we tell stories and how they come alive. That's really what I love the most. I mean, I love breaking down complex ideas and using metaphors and helping explain things. But storytelling in a bigger sense is so powerful. And we're going to talk about that right after the break.
It's time we put help directly in our kids' hands. Introducing Crushing OCD Course for Kids and Teens.
It was way more helpful than all the other therapy we've ever done because we didn't really know what to do. So we weren't really doing it before. So the course helped to figure out what the exposures are and how to do them.
We're not in therapy and find it really hard to find an ERP trained therapist here. So we're currently with like the public health service, but again, they don't seem to be trained in ERP. It's filled that gap that we don't have that was desperately needed.
This was really well timed for us to use between therapists and to help us like start, get off to a good start with this new practice.
It was easy to use. I was able to do it from my phone or also on the computer.
There's different ages, you know, so there were younger kids, there were teenagers, and so that was really nice too, to have a variety of ages where it wasn't just geared towards younger kids or older kids. It was a nice variety.
It's helpful for our kids to hear it from this like third party as opposed to just us saying it.
I really like the offense and defense method. I love working on poking at OCD while it's sleeping. It makes it a little bit easier to do and it's kind of fun. I'm planning on using it to work on my fear of like holding your touching batteries and stuff like that.
So it was really helpful and I think a lot of other kids would like it. I thought that I was like the only one who had worrying about the weather and stuff. And then there was somebody else on there who worried about the same thing, which was really helpful.
Seems less scary to work on stuff now that I've watched this class and I'm more interested to work on it.
I like trying to do more exposures still and going to, before I wasn't, I just didn't want to do them.
I've worked on some of my bigger compulsions and been successful.
I realized that it was helpful to do like the exposures before. It was like really, really hard. It's still hard, but it's helpful to know that I need to do them.
Before there would be a lot of battles about it. So it is definitely less loggerheads.
Really, really good course and super helpful.
Definitely would recommend this. It's really easy to follow. It's in nice bite-sized videos. I really like the worksheets that go along with it. And I think it's really helpful.
To learn more about this course and register your child or teen, go to atparentingsurvivalschool.com. All right, welcome back. So in the first half of the episode, we're talking about just how to explain anxiety or OCD and use storytelling for that to make it come alive, make the science come alive. But now I want to talk about my favorite aspect of storytelling, which is using a story as a tool. So I'm going to give you some examples. You can use stories about empowerment to help a child. And this is more for younger children. So we're going to talk about, after this one, I'm going to talk about ways to use, we're going to eventually get to how to use life stories to weave in lessons and things like that. But when we're talking about creating a story, really older kids aren't going to give you the wiggle room to do that. There comes a time where fantasy becomes very clearly distinct. I'm trying to think of how to verbalize this. When kids are younger, it's very easy because they're moving, they're weaving into the fantasy world and the reality back and forth. They can skip back and forth. That's why they have such great imagination and imaginary play, and they can see a whole lava field in your living room. Like they can just hop back and forth, and it's the beauty of being young. And our kids sometimes, well, typically lose that once they hit their tweens and teens. That fantasy world becomes more concrete. And so storytelling is very powerful for younger kids when you can tell them a story and you can, it can be a parallel story about what they're going through without talking about their own issues. So I'm going to give you an example of what I'm talking about. My daughter, here's a story. See, this is what I do. I give you a story to explain whatever I'm talking about. And this is how you can, I'm going to model it for you in this episode because this is what I do. But my daughter, my youngest, was probably 4 or 5, maybe a little bit younger. And I mean, I spent probably $20,000 on swim class. Really ridiculous. And it wasn't until we got our own pool, because we live in Arizona and everybody has pools out here, that my kids learned how to swim. It was a total waste of money because they just don't have a lot of muscle memory. And I don't know, but day in, day out, going to the swim class was just part of our life forever. And my youngest was so anxious about going swimming. She was very anxious. All my kids have anxiety, so it's not surprising. And I would say to her, what's the scariest part about going to swim class? And she would say, well, I'm really worried that I might sink to the bottom. And then I'd say, yeah, that would be a really scary thought. If I thought every time I got into the pool, I'm going to sink to the bottom, right? So I'm validating it first. I'm not jumping in and fixing it. I'm validating it. Yep, that would be a scary thought. And then I say, well, I wonder if you'd sink to the bottom because you have a coach there, right? So I'm not saying, well, you have a coach there and so you'll be fine. I'm phrasing it in a question so that I can get her to think about it. I wonder if, you know, that would happen because you have a coach there. And then she said, yeah, but I worry that maybe the coach won't be watching and I'll sink to the bottom. I'm not going to create a story until I kind of know what her core fear is. That's important to me. And so I'm addressing it with cognitive behavioral therapy, right? So I say, well, that's interesting that you think that, but you know, have you noticed that there's a whole group of people sitting there watching your class? And so in this particular school, there was a room where all the parents sat and all the chairs were like facing the pool. And there was this big glass window, like ceiling, floor to ceiling. And so you're watching your child the whole time. And so I said, so I'm watching you the entire time as well. So even if, which it wouldn't happen, and it'd be very surprising if it did, even if your coach didn't see you, I would see you. And so again, just dressing the core fear, but then I'm understanding what her fear is. And so one day we're driving, and so she would get diarrhea before swim class. She would get really nauseous. It would be sometimes hard to get her into the pool, like to get her to even sit on the side of the pool. We eventually got her to sit by the side of the pool. And then the hard part was she just couldn't jump in. The teacher wanted her to jump in and she couldn't jump in. She could like kind of creep her way in, but she could never stand up and jump in. And so that's what we were dealing with. And I'm just using this as an example. Obviously, you can do this with anything, but it makes what I'm talking about come alive, right? Because that's what stories do. They give you concrete visual ideas of what we're talking about. And so we're driving there, and I said to her, you know, there once was a girl named, and I used her real name. So sometimes in storytelling, you can use their name and it be very overt with the fact that you're talking about them in third person. Or if that's too close to home and it overwhelms them, you can use a character like a bear or a dog or a different girl's name. Either method helps. I wanted to be very direct with her. And so it wasn't like she didn't know I was talking about her. I was. I said, there once was a girl named blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to say her name. And I said, and she was so nervous about going to swim class. And I could see her little eyes in the back seat getting bigger, like she's talking about me. And I would say, and she would be going to swim class and she would start to feel sick. And her thoughts would be like, what if I fall to the bottom? What if I can't jump in today? What if my coach doesn't catch me? And she was getting really, really nervous. But then she got there and her mom squeezed her hand and she looked at her coach and her coach smiled at her. And she thought to herself, I can do this. I'm just going to go stand by the edge of the pool. And she went to the edge of the pool and she started to feel sick again. I can't do this. She started to get anxious. And she looked at her coach and her coach's arms were stretched out to her and her coach was smiling and encouraging her. And she looked over through the glass and she saw her mom smiling and nodding. And she got closer to the edge and her toes could almost touch the water. And then she said, I can do this. And she was so brave. She took a deep breath and she jumped in the water. And as soon as she hit the water, she could feel her coach's arms wrap around her. And she popped up to the surface and she was so proud of herself for being so brave and jumping into the water. and her coach screamed with delight, and her mom was clapping through the glass, and she felt so proud of herself. So that was a story I would tell my daughter every time we went to swim class. And she was not doing any of that, by the way. That was a fictitious story. She was barely getting through the door. But here's the interesting thing. One day I forgot to tell her it, and we're driving to swim class, and I heard this little voice in the back seat go, "Tell me the story." And I realized it was empowering her. Eventually, it became a true story. She did do that, and she is 12, and she can swim just fine. And it was an empowering, helpful tool. Instead of saying to her, "Be brave, your teacher's going to catch you, I'm watching you," I said those things. I did reframe her thinking initially. But instead of just repeating that when we were driving there and just saying like, "I know this is hard for you, but you've got this, the coach is there and I am there and you can do it," it was so much more powerful to tell her a story that she could viscerally feel, that she could feel the pride, she could feel the nervousness, but then she could feel the empowerment of jumping in and the celebration afterwards. That was much more powerful than just cheerleading her. It gets hard because you wouldn't be able to really do that with a 15-year-old, you know? And then you went into class and you stood up and you were able to do your speech and your teacher, you know, praised you and your classmates high-fived you. You can do it in a different sort of way. You can say, "Do you want to do a visual exercise?" And one of the most powerful ways to practice anxiety is to imagine it going well. And so that's a bit different, where you would preface it as like a guided meditation or a guided visualization. And you would want them to create the story, because it's much more powerful if I'm 15 and I create the story in my head of, then I give my speech and my teacher gives me an A and my friend nods at me, right? And so we can still do this type of intervention or approach, but we would want to frame it in a different way. It'd be like a visual, you know, it would be like an exercise. So close your eyes. Let's imagine you there. We wouldn't be doing it to them, if that makes sense. So that's a really useful tool for empowerment. And you can use that in any kind of way. Another one is using stories to like kind of bestow a lesson or a skill. And I'll tell you how I do that in a creative sort of way for younger kids. And then we can talk about how you do that in for older teens, tweens, teens, and even young adults. So when my oldest was little, she had a lot of social skill issues, was really having a hard time, I think, navigating the social scene. And she would come and she would tell me things that she would do with her peers. And if I overtly corrected her in what I thought was a compassionate way, she would still get defensive and she would feel like I'm blaming her. And so what I started to do is I made up this story that I would tell her every night. And in the story, she would go to this place. I forgot what it was called. I think it was called like Animal Land or Pet. No, it was Pet Land. So I had created a Pet Land separate from her struggles. It was just something that we did every night. She went to Pet Land and she would go to sleep, and then, you know, she would go to her closet and there was this rainbow tunnel, and she'd go, actually, I think it was like she had this little seat in her room. And I'd say she lift up the seat and there was a little like rainbow tunnel underneath it, only when she was in this special, when she was sleeping. And she'd go through this rainbow tunnel and then she went to Petland. And in Petland, the pets ran the world, not humans. And so I would create all these stories around Petland. And it was just a way to calm her. And it was something that she would always go to Petland and she'd tell me about Petland. And we would add different parts to Petland. It was actually part of my effort to create a visual world. I've done podcast episodes where I talk about how to create a world for kids, like a safe place for them to go when they're trying to calm down, trying to go to sleep, or trying to relax. And so part of it was me growing Pet World for her. But a component that I incorporated in Petland at one point was this girl who, I'm trying to think, this was, okay, my daughter's 20. So I'm trying to remember, this goes way, way back, but it was incorporated into Petland and I don't remember how, which is really sad. I guess my brain is not working anymore, but this character would go into this room. Oh, I remember what it was. Sorry. It's like I'm talking to my friend. We're having coffee. In Petland, there was this world where they could go into this room and there was this like crystal ball-ish thing, you know, whatever you're comfortable with. And the animals and her, because she was the only human in this world, would look at the ball and they could see Earth and what's happening in the human world. And what I started to do was I incorporated that they would look into this crystal ball-ish thing and they would see a problem. And so there was a social problem going on in the neighborhood and my daughter had to solve it. And so she would solve it by, I don't remember what she would do, like swoop in, go into the world and try to like fix the issue in some way. And I remember I would incorporate the things that were happening in her real life, like not sharing or, you know, people don't want to play with her. And how does she handle that? Whatever issue it might be. And sometimes it would be anxiety based where she was afraid of doing something or she was afraid of something. And it was never her. It was this character, this other human, this other little girl or little boy in the human world. And she was the only person that can fix it through magic or something like that. And so my point is, that was just what I did. It sounds like a little more complicated than it actually was. Because once I got the framework of the story up, every day, you know, she would go into Petland and then she'd be like, I want to find out what the problem is on Earth. And she would go and she would look into the ball and then she'd be like, oh my goodness. And so it was very easy for me to then have like a framework of, oh, she had a really big problem with this kid today, that I'm going to incorporate that into the story tonight. So for younger kids, you can have a framework of a story and then you can incorporate different problems that they're solving. That could be really cool and really helpful. And I did that with her all the way up until probably about 7 or 8, and then it kind of got old. But you can do things like that with your kids. The other thing is you can do puppet play or imagination play and bring these issues to life through puppet or imagination play with younger kids as well. And so that's really what kids do in play. It's very therapeutic for them. They act out their struggles, the things they're trying to process. It comes out in their play. And so we can incorporate that by picking a topic, kind of creating the structure of the story and letting them kind of fill in the gaps. So that can be another really powerful tool. The other way that I love using storytelling, and this is what I continue to do, it's what I do with you guys, and it's what I do with my kids that are older now, 12, 14, and 20. I use life stories. Life stories tell a lesson. I don't randomly tell life stories without some intention. Normally, I know where I'm going, or if I don't know where I'm going, I wrap it up with a nice kind of lesson at the end without it sounding really obvious, because my kids are not my confidants, you know, they're not my best friends, they're my kids. And if I'm going to tell them a story, one, often there's something I want to convey to them and I know they don't want to hear a lecture. And so I will just say a story that kind of talks about what I wanted to convey to them without saying, you know, you shouldn't talk bad about people because this happens. Or, and I'll give you an example in a second. But even with you guys, when I'm telling a story, it's not just randomly telling you a story. I will think, even in my notes, I will write my points out and then I will put in parentheses what story I want to tell you about that to make it come alive. It's not random. I actually plan it somewhat as I'm rambling through this podcast episode. You're like, I don't know how much she plans it. I do, but I do like to talk from my heart and I like these conversations to be really authentic. So I don't script my podcasts or really plan them out. I know the gist of what I want to say to you, and then I want it to come alive on its own. I want it to be really authentic. And so that's why I am always like, what was I saying? So I'll give you an example of this. My daughter is having a lot of anxiety about anxiety right now. It's getting better, thank goodness, but it has been a rough ride. She had a trigger. I talked about this, I think, last podcast episode. I've been talking about it for the last few episodes, but she had a trigger and it kind of brought her emetophobia and her anxiety back to the point that it was when she was in first, second grade, which was really bad. And so we've been working on this for the last, I don't know, month and a half. Thankfully, it is getting better. She still is feeling really anxious, when she has to go to school or go out and do anything in public or with her friends. But thankfully, it has gotten much better. But I've been talking to her about how I've been saying to her, because a lot of the stuff I'm telling her isn't helping her, because I've been saying what had helped me, because I had panic attacks when I was like 19. And then I got really fed up with my panic attacks. And I said to myself, I got angry with the panic attack. And this goes back to what I was saying at the very beginning of this podcast episode, that different approaches work for different people. For me, personifying my anxiety and getting angry with it and wanting to, I'm a very competitive person. So wanting to crush it and be the victor really resonated with me. And that's why I don't discount that as an approach for other people, even though I know it's very in vogue right now to love every part of your brain. I think it just works differently for different people. So, because that moved the dial for me. And I recognize that doesn't move the dial for everybody. That's why I don't, it's not like the one approach. But I was trying to explain to her that I was having all these panic attacks. And then eventually I was like, I'm so sick of my body having these false alarms. And so I started to be like, nope, I'm not going to have one. And I got really stubborn about it. And I did a bunch of other stuff and I talked to her about that. But that really helped me because I was able to kind of think myself out of having panic attacks. And I said to her, I can't tell you what that's going to be for you, because the way that you think yourself out of this issue is going to have to be unique to you. And so we've been working on, you know, that once the false alarm, once that false alarm bell has been rung, that you have to ride the wave, because physiologically chemicals have been released to save you from the bear that's not there. And so you are going to feel shaky, nauseous, dizzy, uncomfortable, weird. That's going to happen, and that's going to stay there for a little while. And you still have to go and do this, the things that you were scared to do or that overwhelmed you while feeling those things, because those things can't just automatically shut off just because you're having a different thought. So we've been talking a lot about riding the wave, but I was also talking to her about the fuel line. Like, there's a fuel line to that anxiety. And a lot of times when you are constantly checking your physiological status and being like, am I still nauseous? Oh my gosh, I am. And now you're more anxious again. Am I still nauseous? I still am. Now I'm more anxious. I'm actually, I did a YouTube video about that. Well, I know you're in the future. I'm in today and I'm recording it today, but that'll be in the future. And so it's already out by the time you're hearing this on my YouTube channel, which is at youtube.com/@NatashaOCDTherapist. What is my YouTube? Let me see. Yeah, it's youtube.com/@NatashaDanielsOCDTherapist if you ever wanted to check out my YouTube channel. But that's the work that I've been doing with her, is, you know, accepting the physiological response while doing brave things, and then changing your thoughts that shut down the power line, it shuts down the fuel line, rather, of what is continuing that vicious cycle of, I'm anxious, now I physically feel sick, oh my gosh, I feel sick, physically feel sick, now I'm anxious, how do you get out of that loop? And so I told her a story. Instead of, you know, lecturing to her, I said, you know, I know how hard that can be. And I know how hard it can be to ignore your body's symptoms when it's screaming at you, even though you know it's a false alarm, and continue doing something really brave and scary. But for me, sometimes if I shift my thinking, it's crazy, but all of a sudden I can feel the fuel line shut off and I know that I'm getting better. And I said, there once was this time where I was asked to speak, this is a true story, I was asked to speak to a group of school counselors, and I had spoken to them the year before, this school district, and it was a classroom full of about 30, 40 people, and I was super nervous. This was way before I tackled any of my social anxiety, so this is way before I had an online presence, before I did any of this stuff. I was in the thick of my social anxiety, super acute social anxiety. And I remember talking to the 30 or 40 people, and I remember feeling really shaky, and I didn't like the experience, but I did it, and it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. So when they asked me to do it again the year later, I thought, I can do this. It was really good for my practice because it was a school district in my where my practice was, and I was getting a lot of referrals from the school psychologists because they all knew me because I spoke to them, and so I thought, it's worth doing. And so I said, sure. So I'm driving there and I'm thinking, this isn't, I don't remember going this way. And I get to the building, I'm like, this wasn't the building I went to. So I start to be like, what is going on here? And then I realize, well, this is the school district headquarters. Like, this is their main building. I went to an actual school. So I thought, that's weird that they're having it here, but okay, whatever. So I get in there and there's a desk and I have to actually sign in. So I sign in and I'm starting to feel like this all feels so different than what I thought. And I asked the receptionist, I'm like, where's the room? And she goes, it's right there. It's in the double doors. It's in the ballroom. Dun, 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 dun. Right? So I open the double doors and I look in and it is a room packed. It's a ballroom and it's packed with over 200 people sitting at big tables with a podium and a stage up top and someone's speaking and I'm next. I did not expect this. I did not plan for this. And so I close the doors and I am starting to head back to the parking lot because I'm not doing this. There's no way. I don't even care if they call my name and I don't pop up. It was like going to the edge of a cliff and not realizing that someone's going to push you off. And so I'm about to walk to the parking lot and I don't care, my, you know, tails in my knees or in my legs. And then I realize I signed in. They know I was here. So I have no choice. So I go back and I'm physically shaking and I'm thinking, I don't know what to do. Like, I can't do this. And I'm starting to try to calm myself down, but I'm not being successful. And then they call my name. They're like, okay. And our next speaker is Natasha Daniels and da, da, da. So I have to go up there and I am physically shaking. My mouth is so dry. I all of a sudden feel really nauseous and I can't get my voice. And I feel like, and it's a 30-minute talk. And I'm like, I'm not going to be able to do this. And so in my head, I'm standing there and I'm like, I'm not gonna be able to do this. I'm not gonna be able to do this. And all of a sudden there was like a louder voice that boomed in and was like, get a grip. It was like, get a hold of yourself. This is happening. You are on stage. People are staring at you. Look around. Nobody cares about you. Look around. Look at how many people are on their phone right now. They're bored. They are at a training that they don't care to be at. This is a mandatory training. They've been here all day. I was like one of the last speakers. Nobody cares about you. Get over yourself. And all of a sudden, I felt the fuel line turn off. It just turned off. And I got my voice. And I mean, obviously this happened probably within a like 10 to 20 second episode, but it was felt like forever. And I got my voice and it was a little shaky at first because the chemicals were still in my body. But over time, by the time I was 5 minutes into it and I started to talk and people were laughing, I was making jokes and I'm thinking in my head, who is this? Like the fuel line was off. And so the physical feelings eventually dissipated, but I didn't hone in on them. I was like, yeah, I'm going to feel shaky and my mouth is going to be dry and I'm going to give this speech because I'm here and I have no choice and nobody cares about me. And so I was able to relax and shorten the panic because of the way I reframed my thinking. And ironically, for years later, people would bump into me or they would reach out to me and they'd say, I heard you speak once and you were so great and it was so funny and it was so helpful and I really appreciate it. And I think that was the worst speech I've ever given in my entire life. Like, that's one of the highlights of my like worst experiences. But it wasn't perceived that way because I rethought what was going on in the moment. So I told my daughter that story and what I was trying to convey to her, because I said at the end, when I told her that story, I said, I can't tell you what that would be for you. For me in that moment, it was looking at everybody and saying, nobody cares about me. They're bored and they're here because they have to. That moved the dial for me in that moment. But I can't tell you how you can think. I can help you, but it will only be powerful when you decide how are you going to view things in a different sort of way. And so that was my point. I wanted to bring home to her the power of cutting off the fuel line and finding out how to cut off the fuel line in a way that would be productive for her. And she has gotten better. I'm trying to think, the other day she was like, you know, I just thought this. And then all of a sudden I felt like I could do it. And I know that I've seen that with her before where she can reframe her thinking And it doesn't mean that the physiological aspect shuts off. And that's a really important part for us to convey, is it doesn't mean that your stomach's going to feel better all of a sudden, or you're not going to be shaky. It just means that the fuel line got cut off. But it wasn't going to be powerful to just say that to her. I had to give her a very detailed story. Now, notice in my story, I went through it in minute detail. I built it up. I talked about how it was hard for me before, even around 30 or 40 people, and how I slowly, you know, I thought I could do it, but it would still be hard, and how I was like driving there, and I get in there and I'm starting to feel like things are not right. I'm not jumping into the main part of the story. I'm building it up. And then, you know, the peak of feeling frustrated and feeling overwhelmed and feeling shaky and, you know, really validating that experience, and then shifting to the way that I solved it and coming out the other end, and the happy ending point of people talked about that speech years and years afterwards. And even though I thought it went poorly, other people perceived it differently. There's so many life lessons in that story without having to say it. So when we talk at our kids and we say these things, oh, that happened to me once, and you know, I had a really horrible speech, but then I was able to do it. We just have to do hard things. That's very different than me walking through, and then I was driving there and I was like, where am I going? This feels different, right? Building up the anticipation, because then they really lived the story and they experienced the story. And that's good storytelling. So I hope this was helpful for you. Try it out. Think about, how do you tell stories to your kids? Do you tell stories to your kids? Do you use stories in the way that you help them with anxiety or OCD? It can be a really powerful tool. So I hope that you're going to join me in my free series coming up. Don't forget, you can still register for that at atparentingsurvivalseries.com. We'll be talking all about lots of stories in there about how to help your kids and how to create a therapeutic home environment so that you have a plan and you're not living in chaos. So sign up for free. That is ending this week, so there is still time, but it is a limited amount of time. And then if you are enjoying this podcast, don't forget to hit a star or review it, because I greatly appreciate that. And it does help other parents figure out that maybe this podcast is actually helpful. I do want to thank Ms. You Laura. I was like, wait a minute, what is that? Ms. You Laura, who wrote, perfect timing. I'm a therapist in Illinois and my daughter, age 10, has anxiety and OCD. I've learned so much from Natasha that has been extremely beneficial both personally and professionally. I am often a punching bag for my daughter, and I really love this language of dropping the rope. It gives me permission to disengage in a loving way, and sometimes it's easier said than done, but this really helps solidify why it is the right thing to do for her both emotionally and physiologically. Keep sharing the knowledge. I always learn something new. Oh, and I appreciate that. Thank you for writing a review. And she is talking about an episode I did on, are you a punching bag for your child? Let me see what episode that is. Let me see if I can find that. Yeah, that is, if you're interested in that, that's episode 356. Are you a punching bag for your child's anxiety and OCD overwhelm? So I'm glad that you enjoyed that. And maybe if you write a review, I'll be reading your review next time, because I do like to do that to show my gratitude. And don't forget to find the sparkle in everything you do. And I'll talk to you again next Tuesday. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the AT Parenting Survival Podcast. To get additional support raising a child with anxiety or OCD, visit Natasha's online school of on-demand classes at atparentingsurvivalschool.com.